Back in verse 13:22, we find that Jesus is on his way, passing through cities and villages as he is teaching and journeying toward Jerusalem. He's on his way to the cross. He's on his final trip from the area of Galilee down to Jerusalem, passing through the area of Samaria and Upper Galilee, and on a particular Sabbath day. There were several events that took place. So at this point, Luke sort of focuses in on one of the Sabbath days as Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. And as he focuses in on this Sabbath day, it will carry us from the beginning of chapter 14 all of the way through chapter 17, verse 10. All of these events, from 14 through 17, verse 10, are events that happen on this one day. That is why John said, if all of the things that Jesus said and did were written in books, I suppose that all of the libraries of the world could not contain them. So we read in verse 1, chapter 14, it came to pass as he went into the house of one of the chief Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath day, they watched him. Now, further down in the chapter, we realize that Jesus was invited to this chief Pharisee's house for this Sabbath day dinner. In fact, it says, turned to him who had invited him, the one who bade him to come to the feast, and he spoke to him about who he should invite to his feast. There were many guests that were invited to this particular Sabbath day feast. Jesus, it tells us, was observing how they picked out their places to sit. We'll get to that in a moment. Sabbath day meals were somewhat of a special occasion, but they were very interesting in as much as you could not prepare any food on the Sabbath day. So all of the food had to be prepared in advance. No preparation of food was allowed on the Sabbath day. Nor were you able to cook anything on the Sabbath day. Even to the present day, this Sabbath day law holds for the Jews. The Sabbath day, you were not to kindle a fire in your dwelling, and thus they're not allowed to turn on the stove, or they're not allowed to turn on the electricity. You can't plug in the coffee pot. You can't turn the switch on the coffee pot. What you have to do is, and they all have these big pots, and they plug it in and turn the switch on before sundown on Friday evening. Now, of course, if you forget to turn the switch on, then you're in trouble. No hot coffee, no hot tea until Saturday night. That would be a major infraction of the family kind of policy. So they always turn everything on before sundown on Friday evening. In those days, of course, they could not kindle the fire, and they had developed methods of keeping the food warm, packing it in feathers or different things. But they could not pack it in anything that might create some kind of a heat. For instance, grass, when it is wet, will generate heat. So they couldn't put it in leaves that were wet. The same with fertilizer will generate heat, so they couldn't set it on fertilizer, the pots of food. They could only keep it warm by dry leaves or by feathers or by, you know, they had all of these rules and regulations, little piddling things about the Sabbath, what you could do and couldn't do. And Jesus was always just bursting in and violating their whole Sabbath day rituals and customs and laws that they had set up, not the law as God had set it up. And so this chief Pharisee in this particular village had planned a feast and invited the guest, and Jesus was one of those that was invited. And it says they watched him. Now this word in the Greek is to carefully watch with a sinister intent. It would be like a robber who is intent on robbing you. And he is lurking in the dark spots, watching you carefully, waiting for you to turn your back so he can pounce on you. And they were just waiting for Jesus to do something wrong so they could pounce on him. Now, obviously, this whole meal was a setup. The reason why they invited Jesus was to set him up. Because they had also invited a man to this meal who had the dropsy. Now, the dropsy today would be called edema. It is an inflammation that is caused by the retention of fluid in the tissues. It creates a great swelling. And there was this man who had this condition of dropsy, who was also invited to the feast. And so they had set Jesus up. They were watching him with a sinister intent to see if he would heal this man on the Sabbath day, in order that they might find fault against him, in order that they might accuse him. It was just a setup all the way through. And that is why it says in verse 3, and Jesus answering. You see, they didn't ask any questions. And yet Jesus is answering. What is he answering? He's answering to the question that is in their minds. Will he heal this man on the Sabbath day, which is a violation, a clear violation of their laws? And so the question in their mind is he going to do it? And he is answering, Jesus answered them, that is answered the question in their minds of whether or not he was going to heal on the Sabbath day. And Jesus answering spoke to the lawyers and the Pharisees that were there. And he said unto them, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? You guys are lawyers. You fellows know the law. You practice law. Tell me, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? There are 7 times in the New Testament where it is recorded that Jesus healed people on the Sabbath day. Seven different occasions. And every one of them created consternation in the minds of the Pharisees and the scribes of that time. And so Jesus, before he did anything, just asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? In the synagogue in Capernaum on the Sabbath day, when there was a man with a withered hand, and again they watched Jesus to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath day, Jesus said to the man with the withered hand, stand forth. And then he turned to the Pharisees and he said, is it lawful on the Sabbath day to do good or to do evil? It's sort of a rhetorical kind of a question, because there's no way they can say it's lawful to do evil on any day. And so it should be lawful to do good. I mean, after all, just because it's the Sabbath day, you shouldn't restrain from doing good. But you see where he's putting them. They say, well, it's lawful to do good. Then would it be good to heal this man? Or would it be evil to heal him? He said, is it lawful to heal or to kill on the Sabbath day? Well, it's never lawful to kill. So again, he's really, the whole idea is to show them how preposterous their position was. Preposterously foolish, the positions that they had taken in their traditional interpretation of the Sabbath day law. That is, to say that it was not lawful to heal a person on the Sabbath day. And Jesus was coming, the law, you see, didn't say that. This came from their interpretation of the law. And they had the Mishnah, which was the oral interpretation of the law developed by the rabbis. And out of the Mishnah, there developed the Talmud, which were the written opinions of the interpreting the Mishnah. So the Mishnah interpreted the law, and the Talmud interpreted the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is some 60 volumes of works interpreting the Mishnah, the oral interpretation of the law. And when you get into some of the things that they discuss, you know, as far as Sabbath day and all, you realize just in what detail they sought to define what you could do and couldn't do. Today, they still interpret the law where it talks about what you can or can't do. We have friends who are kosher Jews, and they visit us from Israel once or twice a year. And we try to accommodate them on the Sabbath day. We get them to their motel before sundown, because they can't ride in a car after sundown on Friday evening. And we try to have enough potato chips and Cokes to get them through the day, you know, have food for them. But as we were, one Friday evening, didn't have the food prepared, we said, oh, what are you going to do? You know, we were going to leave them, and we weren't going to let them rest on the Sabbath. We weren't going to bother them on the Sabbath day. And they said, well, they have a restaurant in this hotel. We said, yes. They said, but we said, after all, though, you know, you can't buy anything on the Sabbath day. They said, well, do they take a Visa card? We said, yeah. We can give them a Visa card. That's not giving them money. So the rabbis interpret now the law that you couldn't buy the meal and pay money for it, but you can buy it and pay the Visa. So give them the Visa card. So it accommodates them to where, you know, they can do a little bit of eating out now and then on the Sabbath, as long as they have their Visa card with them. But it's interesting. Jesus just, you know, came head on with this whole tradition that had evolved around their interpretation of the Sabbath they lost. And so he asked them, answered the question, will he heal on the Sabbath day? He just said, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? You tell me. And it said, they held their peace. That is, they didn't answer him. They wouldn't respond. He gave them the chance to respond to it, but they didn't respond. And probably with good reason. When a person is physically disadvantaged, there is always a natural sympathy that we feel for that person. And it isn't polite or nice to say things about disadvantaged people. If a person is blind, you don't say, nya, 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 you can't see. Because immediately everybody would say, why, you cur. You know, that's terrible. And you'd immediately be the goat in the crowd because you've made fun of a person's disability. And so by Jesus putting the question to them, he really put them on the spot. Here is a man, obviously, that needs help. Now, who is going to withhold help from this man? Who will be so dirty as to say, you can't help him? You see, immediately that person would incur the wrath of the crowd. So by Jesus taking the initiative, he put them on the defensive. And they couldn't respond. They couldn't say, no, it's not lawful, you know, don't you dare touch him or help him, you know. Because then the crowd would be, well, come on now, what's the matter with you? So when they held their peace, Jesus took him and healed him. They didn't voice an objection. And of course, now they're sort of, they had their chance to speak. Now that the man is healed, they really can't say much. I mean, it was a very good move on the part of Jesus. But he's not through with them. He now turns to them and says, which of you, if you had a donkey or your ox that fell into a pit on the Sabbath day, wouldn't you immediately try and pull him out? Now, in those days, they didn't have OSHA. And a lot of high liability kind of suits. And many of the wells were just unguarded open pits. And it would be an easy thing for a ox or a donkey to sometimes fall into the well, into the pit, a common occurrence. Now, in the law, in Exodus, God, in his concern and love and interest for his creation, provided in the law that if your ox or donkey would fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, you could pull him out. That was a part of the written law in the book of Exodus. God was concerned for the welfare of his creation. And thus that little bit of concern for animals was placed into the law. And so Jesus is now bringing up that one particular facet of the law and said, which of you fellows, If your ox or your donkey would fall into the pit on the Sabbath day, wouldn't you immediately pull it out? And again, without saying it, without having to give the punchline, they could see what he was pointing at. If God is interested in the animal kingdom so that he has made provision in the law to help an animal that's in distress, even if it's on the Sabbath day, it's lawful to help that animal from its distress. You're not violating the law if you help it and relieve its distress. If God is that interested in his animal kingdom, surely he is interested in his highest order of created being on the level that we can observe, and that is man. And God would be interested in helping the distresses of man, even though it were the Sabbath day. And that was the inference that Jesus was making. It was very clear. They could all see it. And thus, they had absolutely nothing to say. I mean, he completely silenced any kind of objection that they may have had for this particular incident. And so verse 6, they could not answer him again to these things. I mean, he answered their problems before they had a chance to even ask them or express them. Now, this in turn opened the door for Jesus to share a parable. He's going to teach them now a little bit about spiritual things. Using this background, they're at the feast. And the next few parables are going to involve eating at feast and social etiquette, but more divine spiritual principles and laws. And so the first parable that he put forth, and he put this to those who were bidden, to the other invited guest. And what prompted it was he was marking how they chose out the chief rooms. And so he said unto them, when you are bidden, any of you, to a wedding, don't sit down in the highest room, lest a more honorable man than you is invited, and the one who invited you will come and say to you, give this man your place, and you'll have to step down. But begin with humility to take the lowest room. And when you are bidden, go and sit down in the lowest room, so that he who invited you will come and say, oh, my friend, come on into a higher room. And then you will have worship in the presence of them that sit at meat with you. And then he gave the spiritual principle, for whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Jesus was observing the way they came into the room, came into the house, all of these invited guests. And he saw the jockeying for the best table, for the better positions. It seems that man, by human nature, is always looking out for himself and seeking the best for himself. When I was a child, part of my mother's training was when I was offered a dish with cake or candy or goodies, to take the one that was nearest to me, not to pick around and get the biggest. or the one with the most icing on the top, you know. But she had to train me for that. You see, my natural inclination and my natural desire was to get the biggest piece. And I would study carefully and try and position myself to the plate so that I could sit nearest the biggest piece and I could get the one nearest to me without, you know, reaching around. Because there is something within us that desires the best for me. After all, I deserve it. That's human nature. Looking out for yourself. And we have to be taught, we have to be trained to be gracious. It isn't natural. To be generous, it isn't natural. To be courteous, it isn't natural. These are characteristics and traits that we train our children in social graces. But it is a part and a necessary part of training because it doesn't come naturally. Jesus was a tremendous observer of human nature. And I really have found myself that one of the most fascinating things is to watch people. And I also love to observe human nature. Whenever I get trapped, and I have to go shopping with Kay, when she goes into the stores, I can't really handle it. And so what I'll do is I'll sit out in the mall on one of those seats out there, and while she's going through the store and looking at everything, I mean everything. I find that I can pass my time quite enjoyably by just observing people. And I enjoy just observing people and watching them, watching their actions, watching their reactions. Many times at social functions, I like to just watch the people. I like to watch how they react to each other. My daughter Jan is a tremendous observer of human nature. In fact, she's very quiet. She goes to a party or something and she'll rarely mix or say much. But after it's all over, if you want to know anything that happened, all you have to do is ask Jan. I mean, she doesn't miss anything. And it's always fun to get her reactions because she is a very astute observer of human nature. And through the years, has just practiced this observing of people. And she has such a tremendous clear insight of the whole thing. She can lay the whole thing out and tell you what problems the people have, and just by observing them and seeing how they respond and react, and she has the whole thing just nailed down. And whenever we wanted to know anything about a person, we'd always say, well, Jan, what did you think? And man, she would have this whole situation just analyzed, just right down. And she's just a quiet observer, but a tremendous analyst, as she is so careful to observe human nature. I have noticed at the conference center how many times when we are serving the food, maybe family style, the portions that people give themselves without consideration. In other words, instead of looking and saying, well, this bowl's got to feed the six people that are here, so I should take a sixth. I've observed how that the first three will take maybe three quarters of the bowl. So by the time it gets to the end of the table, there really isn't anything left for the person at the end of the table. And you know that at the conference center, I always sit at the end of the table. And I think that's why I observe probably what they're dishing out, because I'm trying to figure out if there's going to be anything left for me when, you know, those bozos are through just helping themselves. Sensitivity, consideration. And Jesus was observing. And these fellows, as they come in, you know, with all of this air of importance. I have a friend that every once in a while invites me to lunch with him at the country club. And I love to go there just to observe people. You know, all of the anybodies who are anybodies, you know, eat at the country club. And to see them and watch them greet each other. It's just a fascinating study of human nature and Jesus just loved to watch people, and he saw how that people looked out for themselves and how they liked to impress others with their importance. They liked the positions at the head of the table. They liked the positions of honor and all, and they were always jockeying around to, you know, for this position. And Jesus was observing that. And basically he said, look, when you're invited to a wedding feast or whatever, don't try and get the highest place in the room. It could prove to be embarrassing. The host might have to come up to you and say, oh, we're sorry. You know, the mayor is here, and this is the place reserved for the mayor, you know. And would you mind going over there in the corner? And it could prove to be embarrassing. Better to go over and sit in the corner, and when the host comes in, say, oh, what are you doing over there in the corner? Come up here and sit next to the governor, you know. Dumagian is going to be here today. Much better that it go that way than go the other way. And then the spiritual truth. He that humbleth himself shall be exalted. But he that exalteth himself shall be abased. The Bible teaches us that pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. And there is always that danger if you go around with your nose too high that you won't see that step that is there and you'll end up on your nose. It happens. A person who, you know, takes that me first haughty attitude, first of all, is resented by others. We don't like a person who is constantly pushing themselves to the front of the line. We resent a person that is always pushing himself ahead. We learn to respect those who have the abilities and have the qualities, but never push themselves. He that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Again, the scripture said, humble yourself in the eyes of the Lord, and he will lift you up. How much better it is that a man not think more highly of himself than he ought. Just take your place. Do what God's called you to do, and if God lifts you up and if God honors you, great. If he lets you stay right there, great. But you're not pushing for yourself. You're not trying, you know, to climb over others to exalt your own position. If God lifts you up, that's one thing. If you lift yourself up, that's another thing. And if you lift yourself up, you're going to be abased. He that exalteth himself is going to be brought down. So Jesus is actually saying the way to exaltation, the way to a position of honor, is by the path of humility. Not pushing yourself ahead, but let God bring that honor to your life. Now Jesus takes on the fellow who invited him. Verse 12, then he said also to him that had invited him, now when you make a dinner or a supper, don't call your friends or your brethren, neither your family, nor your rich neighbors, lest they bid thee again, and a recompense be made for you. But when you make a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and you shall be blessed, for they cannot recompense you, and you shall be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. Now, the motive behind what I'm doing. Many times, even in our charitable kind of actions, there are uncharitable motives. Or there are selfish motives behind even our charitable deeds. And the Lord is more interested in the reasons why you did something than what you did. The Bible tells us that one day all of our works will be judged, what sort they are. Really, what motivated them will be the real judging factor of the works that we've done. A lot of times a person will have a big dinner, invite a lot of people for the purpose of advantaging himself. They're going to be obligated to invite me back. So your guest list, you know, is the who's who of the community. And you're doing it to advance yourself. You're not really doing it to be generous or whatever to others. You're doing it for your own advancement. And so Jesus said, when you have a big dinner, don't think of the advancement of yourself. Don't invite the rich of the community, your brethren and you know, that social set. Go out and invite the poor people. Therein is a true motive. They can't repay you. They can't invite you back to dinner. There's no way they can repay you. And therein is the sign of a true generosity, and your reward will come later. But you see, that's something that people don't always desire or appreciate, the reward later. You hear them say, I want mine now. You know, I don't want to wait for the rewards. I want it now. But Jesus at this feast, you see, the whole thing is centered around this Sabbath day, the feast, and what's going on. And the first of all, the observing of the people, how they exalted themselves and say, hey, it's not the way to do it. Secondly, as he observed the people that this man had invited, they were all of those that were going to be able to recompense him. He was going to get it all back. It wasn't really such a generous action on his part at all. It was done with the thought of what he was going to gain and get back from it as others would invite him to their feast. The motive. Next week, we'll look at the final thing that he pulls out of this feast as he gives a parable of a great supper, and now he carries it completely into the spiritual realm, and he now deals with the nation of Israel as he carries it into the spiritual realm. And then he leaves the house. Great multitudes are now following him. It's still the Sabbath day. And we begin to see a lot of the events that take place. And here's some of the interesting teaching of Jesus. And next week, we will cover this difficult passage of Scripture. If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yea, his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. What was Jesus talking about? We'll take a look at that next week.